power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
One. Deadline.
Hello, everybody. Episode 19 of Diplomacy Cast.
Hot off the press.
Hot. Yeah. 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 All hot off the press, episode 19. A prompt.
Timely.
Timely. Ready for whatever.
Yeah, it really has, it has so. a whiff of togetherness and professionalism. I don't
freshness.
Think we've, yeah, it's like it's
we
like,
don't know that that's actually true. We're not to the part where we actually have recorded it yet. So it may turn out that way, though.
Yeah, no, it could be.
Yeah. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. And as we have suggested in today's episode, we're going to go ahead and get through all of that email that y'all have sent us and the Facebook and the everything else that's going on. Just going to devote the episode to that and take it from there. Got a couple quick announcements, and then we're just going to get right into it.
Boom. Got some announcements.
I know. All right, first of all, we've gotten some submissions about some questions to ask Alan Kalhamer. We're not going to probably wait around for this episode to get released to try and get you guys to send more.
We'll be sending them out this week. So if we get some more, we'll get some more. But we'll probably have like 10 to 12 questions for Alan, and it's we'll send them off, and they'll be in the next episode. So that's very exciting.
Hopefully, assuming he gets back to us.
I think he should.
So that's that, and thanks to those of you who did submit. We will have a winner of our submission contest to announce at the time as well.
It's going to be... Oof. I'm already excited to... there's some good questions, though. Yeah, we'll say that.
You'll win a suitcase full of gold bars.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we promised?
Yeah, I think that was probably what it is.
So that's what we're going to do. Next up, we got to do something kind of fun recently.
Yeah.
We being Nathan and I, a Diplomacy Cast, that is, got interviewed about making Diplomacy Cast. So the wheels were turned. We were the interviewees.
Yeah, we were interviewed by Vancouver native Rakan.
Awesome dude.
And I'll probably butcher his last name. I think it's Sudan.
Yeah.
Sudan?
Yeah.
He has a blog called Board Gamer in Paradise. Paradise?
BoardGamerInParadise.com.
And he just, we did a little interview with him. He asked us some questions about diplomacy. It's about an hour to listen to.
Unsurprisingly, it's probably much longer than Rakan thought it was going to be.
Well, we had some long answers. One thing about it, though, just, you know, heads up, the way it was recorded when Rakan's talking, it's just currently just blank. So you won't really hear the questions he's asked, but we're going to suggest that he do a format change. Either way, there is some interesting stuff in there. If you're a Diplomacy Cast fan and you have some, you want to hear a little bit more about it, it's right there. Just that's the website, and boom.
Plus, his blog is really pretty cool. If you guys are just board game interested people in general, check it out, because he just has some cool writing on a lot of different games. But
he does.
Diplomacy is one of his big ones that he writes some stuff about. So, BoardGamerInParadise.com. We're there. Check us out.
Boom.
Yeah.
I'm saying boom a lot today. Today's a boom day.
It's a boom day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You brought the boom.
I did. And then another exciting thing that's gonna be happening... We're putting it in process right now is just to sort of get back in the game a little bit. Eric is thinking about getting and playing an online game.
Yeah, it's gotta happen, doesn't it?
It should happen
one of these years. I should come out of retirement and just for purposes of the show.
Yeah,
Nathan and I just got to talking and decided one of us at least should do this, and I'm the one of us with more time lately.
Right.
Just so we could kind of like talk about the process on the show, or just have like a fun topic. I should play an internet game. I'm not exactly sure where I'm going to do that, in what format I'm going to do that in, anything. But obviously, I expect it to take months, which is great for the show, right?
Yeah.
Having said that, if you online players out there have a persuasive oratory about why I should play on your site as opposed to somebody else's site, or like what format I should do, or, you know, so I'd like to just be thinking about what it would be entertaining to listen to us talk about, right. You know, if I just sort of, I feel like if I just sort of throw myself into a random bundle of people, it might turn out to be like not that great a game. I keep hearing all these things about these people who just show up and then abandon their games, and I'm hoping it's not going to turn out to be that. So if you guys have anywhere you can point me to sort of encourage it to be a really fun game, and or if you want to play or have any suggestions about who some good players would be for this, sure. or anything, where this is an idea earlier than infancy, so
yeah. Send us a line too. We're gonna move on it before long, because I think it's definitely something that we've been interested in looking
plus
into.
Plus, I haven't played Diplomacy in like months and months, and I can't take it anymore. If it has to be online, it has to be online.
That's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. Oh, shout out from the cat.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah. Excellent. Hope you're all enjoying this little interlude here. Oh, she's done.
Good.
All right. We're going to move on, I think.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
That's all I got. No, there's nothing else right now.
We're just going to barrel through about 3 months of piled up emails,
yes.
or at least a few of our favorites of the piled up emails.
Yep.
And that's it.
Your emails.
Oh, for next episode, I guess there is one thing. Next episode, we're going to try, now that we're through all of this backup of email, we're going to start going back to sort of a more structured format. We're going to start having guests again.
Yeah, there'll be some guests next time.
And
well, a guest next time.
A guest, yeah.
It seems unlikely we're going to do multiple
20,
guests.
20, 30 guests, and that'll
you know,
be fine.
It'll be a party.
And all of them inventors of Diplomacy, you know, it'll be super easy. Don't even worry about it. No, but, and we're going to try and have a power play segment next time too. Do some more strategic stuff for you guys. So, okay. Hot off the press.
Yeah, there's people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot.
We just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
Okay, cool. Starting with oldie but a goodie, an email that's been sitting around here for a couple of months. We try and always just get these out on the show when people write, hey, I live somewhere and I want to find other face-to-face players. And so this one is from Chris Babcock. I'm interested in hearing about any players in the desert Southwest. I live in Phoenix, Arizona, but I have a vision for a regional organization that includes Southern California, Nevada, New Mexico, and parts of Texas, as well as Arizona. I can contact players, registrar. Okay, well, I'll get to how to contact them in a second here, but I just like to throw these in there. So, especially I like it when people have ideas for regional organizations,
right.
Because that means somebody like really wants
to. Yeah, as far as I know, there's really nothing going on. Down there.
Not so much out of that corner of the country. So if you are a listener from that corner of the country, we'll put you in touch with Chris and see what's happening. And Chris, a good thing to do would be set up like a listserv what do you call it?
Meetup
or a Yahoo group or whatever to try and get people all in the same place. And if he does that, he'll write us and we'll let you know how to get on that. He goes on to say that he runs one of the old, judges, you know,
yeah.
Judge software, USAK. He says that's how you can contact him, is via his USAK judge. He says he's really hands-on in getting new people acclimated to the software. There's a steeper learning curve than on Play Diplomacy or the PHP Diplomacy sites, but I have a reasonable set of web utilities that I think result in a better playing experience that makes it all worthwhile. So there are people out there still running the judges
yeah.
Not that hard. That's how I learned.
No, yeah,
learned
that's how
play.
I mean,
so
they're really
if you're looking
hard.
For a new bunch of games, find USAK, find Chris Babcock, and for face-to-face or online.
Yep. Make it happen.
Easy enough.
Easy.
Okay.
I like that. I do hope he'll follow up and see where, I mean,
yeah,
Chris,
organize,
seriously
organize.
Do, look to what Jim McCulley's done over in Chicago. It's a really good model. Meetup really kind of works well, and if you can inspire some people to do that in the in some major cities around in the Southwest, I mean, you'll be going places pretty quick.
Yeah. Our pal John Jameson.
I miss John.
I know. The lovable drunken Scott, who is John Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
Not drunk, not like his name's Scott and also
right,
John.
Right, right. No, he's actually but he's Scottish.
He's Scottish-Canadian.
Canadian. Scottish-Canadian?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good day, fine podcasters, he writes. Congratulations on your wonderful scoring system podcast, and kudos, it was a very smart move doubling the team IQ by inviting Matt Shields to the table.
it was yeah. pretty good.
Yeah, fair enough. He had some notes following that episode regarding C. Diplo. He's apparently a fan of C. Diplo.
It's very European.
With him being very European and all.
Yes.
There's another thing that separates C. Diplo from the other lead-based systems you talked about. In C. Diplo, the end is externally, the game end is it externally determined, while all the other systems you name, the game continues until the group or an aggravated TD decides it has to end. That's true. This is why C. Diplo tournaments generally have a top board. Oh, okay. So his point being, it's easy enough to just manage scoring when everybody's playing the exact same game. In other words, the European C. Diplo style system, well, we always call it European, but whatever. It's used here and there. Everybody plays the same amount, and it, help me out here.
What do you mean? You're doing well. You're doing fine. Oh, you're just wandering down the road. Yeah, they often have top boards.
I say, you don't have to get the most points to win the tournament. You have to beat a group of similar players. So pouring your heart into a 9-center Austria when Matt has a 10-center France on the other table is unlikely to be the determining factor in deciding who gets to the top table. Oh, okay. So his point being, you just play your board,
right,
and whoever wins their board is going to get basically the same amount of points.
Right.
And so you don't have to worry about where your score is relative to the other scores as we do in a
tends to isolate the games a little bit more from insulate it a little bit from the rest of the tournament and what other people are doing, and then and everybody who does the best goes to the top board and they hash it out there.
That makes sense.
You know,
and then he asks us to give a shout out to Van Dipcon taking place, well, it would have taken place the weekend of September 21st in Vancouver, BC. Kilts optional, he says.
Right.
He wrote us later to say it didn't actually come together, so they're working on making a much more serious effort to really do this for next year.
I think we talk, at least I talk a little bit about the specifics of that in that interview with Rakan on Board Gamers in Paradise. We both talk about what Vancouver, you know, just what our opinion is and how to get there and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there has been tournaments. There were tournaments in Vancouver, BC for a few years in a row.
Yeah, they were good.
And I always had a total blast at them. And so I was excited to see that maybe it was getting revived. And so looking forward to hopefully that happening next year.
Definitely.
Vancouver, BC. Woohoo. Let's see. Okay, we got a big one here. And despite me editing it down, our buddy Josh, who writes us big emails and with a lot of different points, he's going back a few episodes to talking about some differences between online and face-to-face play. I did my best to edit down, and
you could try paraphrase.
I may paraphrase a little bit. I'm not saying I won't paraphrase. Yeah. but he does make some actually pretty good points about some differences between online and face-to-face that I sort of picked my favorites out.
Okay.
And
let's do it. I can't wait to hear about it. I have not read this email.
Okay, here we go. Hey guys, I was going back through various podcasts when I came across some that I meant to reply to and somehow forgot. This email was to get to that point. In episode 16, you had a listener from the online world that sent you an email about some differences between online play and face-to-face play. First thing he mentioned is the sort of role play that goes on. You remember we talked about this a while ago where people like to sort of be, hello, I'm the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He says, This does go on, but only rarely. If someone sends me a press that opens that way, I return the greeting by calling them by their title instead of their country. Most players don't really get into that aspect. I think that's a good, simple piece of advice if you're playing an online game and all of a sudden somebody's the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. Just call him Sultan for the rest of the game and be done with it. So you don't have to feel like you have to all of a sudden, you know...
You don't have to participate in the role-playing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's pretty rare. Let's see. He says the second thing is how Italians don't send press to their Austrian neighbors. We talked about this at length, but I'm still sort of fascinated by it because it still, I think, is sort of a difference between online and face-to-face play. He says, this part I should dispel. It may partly depend on the player, but as you play more skilled opponents, you ought to both send and expect to receive press from everyone else in the game, more so with those closest to you. Whenever I play Italy and Austria, it's rare when there isn't communication going on, especially in 1901. The general consensus, at least on web diplomacy, is that if somebody isn't talking to you, they're probably gunning for you, and only the newest or most unskilled players send press to only a few people.
I largely agree with that.
Yeah, that is something I remember from the online days, is that every once in a while someone would just be absolutely silent from 1901, which strikes me as just unbelievably bad strategy. Like, the guy I'm going to attack, I'm not going to talk to, so he doesn't see it coming. So my ambassador's safe and not in the country that I'm about to buy. I think the more general point that we were talking about way back when was that Italians so often target Austrians in online games that they don't really bother communicating very substantively because...
They're just going to do it anyway.
They're just going to do it anyway. And so why lie about it?
And, yeah, why waste a lot of time on it? That's one thing that I guess, talk is cheap. It's easy to spend a few minutes and, or not even a minute with someone and, give them, hi, Austria, I'm Italy. I'm not going to attack you. I'm going to open a Tyrolio, or I'm going to, do this other thing. But it takes effort to have an email. Yeah. You have to write an email, and it will take you a few minutes to do. I think there might be something to that. I don't know.
To me, you're missing out on half the game if you've sort of made up your mind that you're just going to do it this way because you're Italy and you always attack Austria. Because when you open up the conversation with Austria, you might quickly find out that he's the most approachable, easy to talk to, like smart, good player on the board, and he might have a fun idea that you totally would have missed out on if you're just assuming, well, he probably just thinks I'm attacking him.
And maybe it turns out that your turkey on that board is just really annoying, and it's actually...
Yeah.
You just would rather kill turkey than plow through Austria.
Or bazaar or anything. The point is, I think in any game, face-to-face or online, it's great to have sort of a menu of options. In 1901, it's great to go talk to one guy and say, hey, we could do it like this and see what his plan is. Go to another guy and say, hey, we could do it like this, see what his plan is, and come back. And then you can actually, one way or another, whether you're going to be honest about it or whether you're going to stab.
Whatever you're gonna do.
You can just pick out the plan that you like best, and the more plans you have, the better. And then you can always just, if you don't like any of the plans that anyone has anywhere on the board, then you can always just attack Austria or whatever you're gonna do anyway. But I think it's a shame to not exchange. Josh is saying that in his experience, they actually do talk quite a bit, and he actually goes on to talk a little bit about Italian openings, and he says Lepantos aren't as uncommon.
Yeah, there's more of them.
As it's been characterized in online games, the people in Italy often don't move straight in and decide in the fall, kind of like us in the us in the face-to-face world do. Okay. Skipping. Another difference that he pointed out, which it was another thing that made me go, oh yeah, I kind of remember this stuff. He says, depending on the site, there are other ways to detect a lie or a ruse that you don't have in a face-to-face game. We always think of the face-to-face game as the,
A little bit easier to do that kind of thing.
Right.
Body language, whatnot.
Right. But he says, on WebDip, players have a green dot next to their name indicating they are online. I have been able to key in on a line when I send someone a message, log off, return later to see that they are on, and never receive a reply. until later when receiving an answer is critical, i.e. when a stab of a third player might take place, or as your ally gets to possibly choose who to work with, you or the other guy, indicating that he had been talking to the other guy and was awaiting a reply before getting back to me. Also, there are timestamps that indicate the last time someone logged on. If someone was on and didn't send a message, you might be in trouble.
Mm. I guess that's one way to do it.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I don't see that as, you know, particularly dirty pool or...
No, not at all. It's just you're like, there's literally no difference between that and looking across the room and seeing two people talk to each other in the last minute, or they're the first two people that go, and, you know, it's the same stuff.
Yeah. And that's really something that you have to manage in a face-to-face environment a lot.
Who's talking to who? How long?
Yeah. You
know? If two players spend 5 full minutes talking, probably they're talking about something important, and they're not just, you know.
That's one of the things I feel like I sort of learned later, that like I was giving way too much away by just like who I was talking to and for how long and what I looked like when I was talking to them.
Yeah.
And good diplomacy players in face-to-face tournaments just devour that stuff. They'll just be like, look at him, he's mad. Or, you know, like, look at him. He's excited about something. He's over there. They've been talking for a minute and a half. You know, like, they really key in on who's talking to whom about what, when.
And use it to, use it in their negotiations. Like, look at him over there. There's, especially, and you should never, you try to avoid this, folks. Don't, you know, when you're thinking about doing a triple or something, all three of you should never be talking.
Yeah.
Please don't do that.
Groups of three talking are giant red flags.
Unless it's, like, late in the game and, you know, there's no magic left. You know, you're just trying to grind somebody out, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the early and mid-game, if you're going to do some sort of coordinated three-person thing, don't all three of you talk.
Yeah. I suppose it's probably even worse if there's just one of you and the other six are off somewhere talking.
Yeah,
that's probably not a good sign.
No, that'll happen. As long as all six of them aren't talking together.
No, I'm saying if they're just huddled up like a football game or something.
Or they just vanish you from the board.
Yeah, exactly.
Could you leave? The rest of us are just going
to
look right here.
The rest of us would like to talk about you.
Yeah, if you could just go over there.
But that's something, I mean... I know we were talking about differences between face-to-face and online, and he made a really good point about online, and we got sucked into talking about face-to-face. But at a face-to-face game, something to learn to manage is think about what you appear to be doing to other people. Like, I've definitely been in a situation where I've just been like, we shouldn't be seen to be talking for more than about 15 seconds, so I'm going to go to Bulgaria now, okay? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then you walk off looking pissed.
Yeah.
You know,
or neutral, like, or whatever your strategy is.
Right.
But it is nice to know that on web diplomacy, you can kind of have an equivalent. You have some sense of where people are at, and you can make inferences about that. That's kind of a cool feature.
Judges, you could kind of do it indirectly if you had some third person, you'd be expecting a reply from somebody. You'd ask a third person, hey, have you heard from this guy yet? And then if he said, yeah, he wrote me earlier today, and you're like, wait a minute, he didn't write me.
Yeah, you could do it a little bit. It just requires you know, some independent verifications instead of just being able to gather that intelligence yourself. So that's cool to know. Maybe you should play on web diplomacy.
Maybe not. That little green dot. Okay, got it.
Well, it's good to know. I mean, if you're going to play an online game, this is also something to be aware of.
Yeah,
like, it's a good heads up.
One more point he made that I thought was interesting. Final difference I want to point out is one that has been a particular problem for me since I don't play live games. And I think when he says live games, he's got in parentheses 5-minute phases. So he doesn't mean face-to-face. He just means live online games.
Yeah, there's real-time diplomacy.
Yeah. Is that while it can be easy to get a player angry at someone else to the point that they're willing to throw a game in your favor, phase length can allow an angry person to have several days to sleep off his anger and come to his senses and switch sides to prevent you from taking a solo, especially in games where a pause takes place at a critical stage.
Yeah.
If it weren't for this one thing, he says, I would probably solo in closer to 30% or more of my games. Okay, if you say so.
Well, you know, there is something to be said for that.
Like, yeah.
It is critical to be able to... we spent a whole episode talking about this.
Yeah.
You need to have people just be...
Help.
And oftentimes that takes a form of people doing something that isn't in their best interest because they, at that point, they just want to get back at somebody else. And if they have time to sort of you know, same reason we have a 3-day wait after you buy a gun, you know. It's similar. It's a similar philosophy behind it. Like, oh, you're mad right now. I'm not going to, you know what, why don't you wait a few days?
Come back for the gun.
You know, it's, and he's, it's a perfectly valid point. I mean, like, it's definitely going to make it a lot harder to do.
Yes, but having said that, I don't know, maybe like, I've thrown games in person, I've thrown games online,
sure,
I've tried
have.
To throw games, I've pretended to throw games, I've the thing about the game throwing thing,
I just seem like you're bragging about it. I've broken a lot of games.
Yeah, totally.
I have
just taken a dump all over boards.
I have
before.
Definitely that's, broken them in a way that is sort of I don't know. I like it. I like the pride you have there.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Civic pride.
It is.
Yeah.
It's good.
Point being that I'm not necessarily when I'm doing it. Sometimes I'm angry. But that's actually pretty rare. I'm doing it. There are reasons that I'm doing it, and they're they're not just that I'm having a tantrum. I may be,
absolutely.
I may appear to be having a tantrum just to get across my point that I'm serious about throwing a game. I may actually be a little angry about something that someone did to me. But to me, a 2-day cool off, I'd still probably 95% of the time that I've decided to do something like that, I'd still come to the conclusion that it's in my best interest to do something like that.
That is true.
The point of throwing a game isn't necessarily just irrational rage. And that's the point I want to quibble with. The point of throwing a game, what's the old joke about punishing bad behavior?
Yeah.
Or promoting good play or
let's
whichever.
Let's not tell that joke.
No, we're not going to tell that one. But whichever way you want to call it, the point of throwing a game is that it gives you something to do once somebody has sort of irrevocably hurt your game.
And for
the future. You know, either the future of this game or the future of another game that you play with the same people to sort of communicate, it's better to work with me than it is to work against me.
Well, and also there's a certain point, and I agree with that. There's also, you can look at it this way, like you're not a very credible person if you make threats and don't follow through.
Exactly.
So if you say you're going to throw it and you really get to the point that you're just, that sometimes you feel like you need to follow through.
Yeah,
sure.
Or even before, I mean, I don't necessarily get to the point with every ally that's like, but if you stab me, I'm going to throw the game to Nathan. You know, like a lot of times that's just sort of implicit. Like they know that if they shoot for me, they'd probably better kill me.
Yeah.
And that's important in the current game. And it's also important for future games and the future game thing. It's like, I just like it when people have a memory of how much fun it is to be my ally and how incredibly unpleasant it is to not be my
ally.
That's mostly
my entire metagame strategy right there.
Mine too.
I'm fun now.
Yeah.
Don't make it unfun.
Yeah, exactly. But more
getting
on
back,
that in a minute.
Getting back to his point, I wasn't trying to imply that the only time that solos happen or someone throws a game, there's like this irrational anger. But it's fairly common, especially around players that are in, you know, a little bit less experienced. I think you can, you know, your attitude on it is going to be different. There's a lot of people that get a little bit more emotional, and I think there's a lot of solos that happens. There's certainly what you're talking about exists and is perfectly happy. I agree with him to the extent like that is going to be a barrier in some of the cases.
Yes, people cool down. But my point, I kind of disagree because I think that cooling down is all well and good, but a lot of times that I've thrown games, I could cool down and still think that it would be the right thing to do days later. And we've talked about this on previous episodes
at length,
like what to do when you're getting your butt kicked. You know, one of the things that you can do when you're getting your butt kicked is make it really miserable for the guy who's trying to kick your butt and, you know, maybe get yourself back into a game that way.
Just by
going and being like, all right, well, now I'm helping Josh solo. To heck with all of this. That's not really your only motivation there to help Josh solo. So a little bit of your motivation is to keep playing and see if you can find an opportunity later.
True.
But having said all of that, occasionally you actually Josh does just solo.
Yeah.
When you do that, like occasionally, because you're little and sometimes you don't have a good idea or you make a mistake or Josh decides to kill you when you don't think it.
Sure.
But the point is, you were in a bad position anyway. And if you're threatening to help somebody, sometimes it turns into an opportunity. And most of the time that I turn into tantrumy throw mode, there's at least part of me that's trying to figure out how to do that. So
that's true.
Anyway,
that's
all right.
True.
Okay. Speaking of absolutely irrational rage and flipping the heck out, I think you'll like this next one. It comes from Brian Johnson. He writes, "Hey guys, I'm fairly new to the game of diplomacy, and while I still have major room for improvement in my game, I feel like I'm starting to become a really solid player." Awesome. "I want you to know that I love your show, and I hope that it's still alive and running, and can't wait." Oh, I've written this during the long dark night.
I hope it's still happening.
Yeah,
you seem to have taken an entire season off.
Yeah. Can't wait for future episodes because it's been too long. Yeah, it had been.
Sorry, Brian.
I've played solely online, but the face-to-face game seems even better, and I hope to get a chance to play it someday. Yeah, we hope that too.
Yeah, definitely.
The thing that he wrote about, he goes, "I was browsing YouTube the other day, and I saw some old video footage from WDC and DipCon in 2007. In case you've never seen it or just haven't seen it in some time, it has lots of great moments, including some from both of you."
Oh, yeah.
And then he includes a bunch of links, and I don't know how to tell people to find this, because it's like YouTube/WRG794.
I think if you... well, he actually
YouTube WDC DipCon
2007, or you could do it. The person that did this filming is the father of a player, and he actually used to play a lot. He's a big math guy, and he has a website.
Wait, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, yeah, right. Nathan's mug is the very first thing that we that I saw on this. After a sponsored food truck link, the first very next thing we see is Nathan. So WDC DipCon, search that on YouTube.
Be fine, it'll be easy.
And there really is actually a ton of.
Yeah, he did a bunch of interviews.
I haven't watched all of it yet, but I know you have.
I've seen it all. Yeah,
because it was like Nathan's tournament, basically. Yeah. That he ran. It's some pretty fun stuff, actually. It's the only attempt, like serious attempt, that anyone's made in a long time to like really try and get what it looks like at a tournament.
And he's a filmmaker, right? So he had the right gear. He knows what he's doing. It's not like it's clearly low budget, but it's not amateur.
Yeah. So. There's a playlist with 18 different video clips, apparently. So find those. He says, "Here's a couple of my favorites," and he sent a couple of links to us. Nathan Raging. It's the very first one.
I know what he's talking about.
He says, "Nathan, if you remember the game, were you completely serious in the comments you made, or were you just diploming? In the case you were being truthful, did the game turn out like you predicted?" So, go ahead.
Oh, well, it's too funny, actually, that you bring this up, because there's so much funny stuff about that game. See, because it's filmed, so you know everyone who went to the tournament watched that particular video, because it's the only video that what he tried to do was find a game and watch it all the way through. And I remember talking with him afterwards, and he said, "Oh, well, your game kind of looked the most fun," and that's mostly because I was being loud and rambunctious. What happened was, I was, as you can tell from the video, I was Turkey, and Russia, Austria, and Italy just decided they were going to take me out.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to take me out, get me out of the game. And so you will see me early in the video trying my best, and I am just, it's ranting's pretty good. I'm doing everything I can to try and throw them off, and it doesn't matter. I'm pointing to the other side of the board. I'm telling them they're bad players, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there is more to that video that he's never posted there, but I have also never seen. It actually goes on, and you see what happens. Eventually, I do quite well. I end up topping that board. However, if you do watch the video and you watch it carefully, as my good friend Chris Brand...
Maybe I should stop you right here.
Uh-huh.
Anyone who wants to watch this video and watch it really carefully and tell us what you discover about it that's interesting...
Yeah, then maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
So why don't you watch the video and see what happens, And you could say that, yes, I did end up doing quite well on that board, but it might not all have been because of my skills. Well, at least my diplomacy skills.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. It's good times.
I think it's the very first of the 18 or so videos that there are.
Yeah, it's the only one that says game. The rest of them, like, they say interview or...
Game part one. Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Right.
There was also some video of me, not quite as much. Nathan got, like, because he was, like, the featured game of the video, but there was a couple of minutes of me. And my first reaction to it is, man, I was fat. Back then, and I'll tell you what, I lost some weight, dude. Jeez. my second reaction to it is, yes, I also remember that game, and I was not a happy camper either. I was mostly just sitting there going, well, you screwed everything up. Way to go. To some guy off camera. I do actually remember that game also. I had forgotten about it.
It's a funny game.
At this video.
I remember talking with you about that game.
Yeah. It was a real meltdown of a game for me. I got... very surprisingly stabbed very early in the game. And it was by somebody who I had just the previous day had basically a game long alliance with on a board. And then we were neighbors again on this board. And I guess I made the mistake of going, oh, well, this guy and I work well together. Maybe we can just try and do it again. I think we were like Italy, Austria.
You were something. He was definitely Italy.
Yeah, he was Italy. I was Austria. Yeah, that's right. And I was like, okay, we have a plan. This is great. I know I can work with this guy. It's gone very well. And it was somebody that I'd never actually met before that tournament.
Yeah.
And so like my total exposure to him was one game plus one spring 1901 negotiation or whatever. Or maybe it was fall or something.
It was 01.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was spring or fall, but he stabbed me like right away and basically just said, well, I wanted to do something different.
Never assume.
Just because that last alliance went well, this one will too. And I was like, fair enough. And it actually ended up not being great for either of us. He and I were both ended up.
He stabbed you both
game.
To death.
Yeah, he really did. Which is fine. I mean, I've done that.
Oh, well, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I've stabbed both of us to death with lots of people. But he, I do remember just. Not really, like, basically that video clip is just of me going, well, you pretty much blew my game, you know? Like, I wasn't really trying to convince him to do anything in particular, because I don't remember what the position was, but I just remember being like, I literally have a poop sandwich on a plate. That is my position. There's like,
well, didn't he do something crazy?
And him coming to me and just being like, well, let's work it out. What can we do? And just looking at the board, just being like, seriously, nothing.
Game's over.
Yeah.
Like, but didn't he do something crazy with it? Like, build it?
I'm still not sure this was the same game. Okay. But yeah, it may have been the one where the guy,
didn't he stab and build?
Stabbed, got an extra build, built Fleet Venice.
Yeah, he built one, and his build was Fleet Venice. And I think it was in the Adriatic.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was I've talked to the guy actually since then, and he kind of didn't remember it at first, and then he was like, oh yeah, I kind of do remember. Yeah, that wasn't my best game. And I was like, it ruined my life. But
it was funny. It was funny.
So anyway, that was my bit of video. He's also got Eddie being Eddie and giving a history lesson as a preferred link. Yeah. All right.
So. You know, there you go. All right.
Yeah. So if you guys want to spend some time with that, let us know.
Yeah, they're good videos.
Any other of that video stands out that you want to talk about? He says, anyway, I just wanted to say I love the show and it certainly helped me with my game and I hope to see more episodes soon.
All right.
Thanks, Brian.
Appreciate it.
Next up, we've got a couple that I sort of compiled together from Jim Burgess, our old pal Jim Burgess.
It's not nice to call him old. He's not old.
Yeah, well, we've known him a while.
We have known him a while.
Yeah. He's just following up on, we asked some people to send in their WDC experiences since I wasn't there and Nathan's was mostly, I sucked, I was sad. But we Hi, guys. Thanks for answering my most burning question regarding the aftermath of WDC. How did Nathan manage to end more of his games early so he could drink more?
Well, it was pretty easy. I sucked.
Oh, okay.
No, I got rushed a couple of times. You know.
Yeah. He says, unless you were a Wuthering falling down drunk in your games.
No.
He said you had a very different view of how to play the square system than players in his games, which went on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it's true.
So some really people did. Like, you know, I've always felt in the some of Square's type systems that I just try and get every dot I can, you know, which is sort of contradictory to other things I've said on the show. But like, if you're doing good, keep playing. Most of the time, you know, because you can usually only do better. So I tend to think that people who are doing it correctly play the games to their logical conclusion in that kind of a system. But
this depends.
Yeah. People sort of take it different ways.
Well, and it just depends on who's on top making the decision to end the game. I mean, their philosophies, and you know.
Yeah.
You just never know.
Yeah.
Sometimes your scoring system can help promote that, but
yeah,
I think this Sum of Squares is not one that does either way.
I think maybe people still misunderstand it a little bit.
Yeah, that might be true.
I feel like that if everyone's playing right, there probably should be a lot of draw votes, but most of them should probably fail. Like, there should usually be one guy who thinks that there's a point to continuing to play to improve his own score,
you know,
one or two.
Yeah, I think as we talked about at length, there's this risk balancing that to continuing the game that I think the system hasn't been played enough for people to get a really nuanced feel of how to balance those
risks.
But
my point is, there should almost always be one person on the board, like who
almost
and
always
all it takes is the one to veto.
Right.
A draw. There should be at least one person who just goes, you know what, I know you guys are all happy with your risk-reward scenario here, but I'm not.
Well, that person almost always should be, well, I'm at the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. If the thing keeps going, there's a chance that one of these other chuckleheads isn't going to do as well as they would right now.
Sure.
And I'm playing all of them in the tournament, so it behooves me to keep the game going,
sure.
Unless there's a true solo threat.
Yeah, or if that guy's, like, few points are really precious to him, maybe he wouldn't want to risk it, but...
Yeah, it's possible. Maybe some people... It just depends, because sometimes you're like, well, at least I get some points, and I want to go, eat dinner.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Anyway...
Maybe people just don't care about winning tournaments very much.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
They might not be as obsessed.
Yeah, I get that. Let's see. He says... he had the distinct honor of being the stabbed ally of two WDC solos, Don Schiffler and Robert Roos.
Nice.
They got rolled on the top board, he says. But,
well,
yeah.
But this tells you you really want to be on the Burgess board.
Yeah, be on Burgess board.
Yeah, and then stab him for the solo.
Uh-huh.
Well, or,
he says,
might stab you
well,
for the solo.
Well, here, he goes on. He says, the Roos solo was particularly interesting since we had a three-way alliance with Graham Wuthering being the third person. Unfortunately for me, Graham was blind drunk. It was after midnight, and Robert was next to Graham, and I wasn't.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Oh, Graham.
P.S. I'm doing TempleCon again, February 1st through 3rd, 2013. When are you thinking of dates for WACCon?
I think it's going to be the weekend before that. So it'll be I think it's the 25th.
Where's TempleCon?
It's East Coast. It's, I think...
Send us the details.
Yeah, send us the details. We'll throw it up on the website. We'll throw it up on the website. Why not?
Another one from Josh, as if he hasn't taken up it. I don't know. Josh writes us good emails. They're kind of long, but you're right. I liked this topic, too.
I'm going to pick the emails next time.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. And you'll write them all yourself.
Yeah, then it all things
Dear Nathan, this is
Dear Nathan. Hi.
You're the way better guy.
I don't
show.
Like that Eric guy.
Here's a question I'd like to hear your opinion on. Being an online player, there's some controversy over a player that goes into civil disorder. Different sites have different attitudes how to approach this, as do different groups of people within a site. Some
sure.
feel that if the CD occurs within the first so many years, it's appropriate to draw. Well, if it happens late in a game you play on, other people contend that any game should be drawn immediately, while some play to the game to its finale regardless. A final group simply desires to cancel a game under such conditions. How is it handled in a face-to-face tournament scene? I'm sure it's far more common online, but once in a blue moon, it does happen. in live play. Yes. Absolutely true.
Yep. Almost always it's resolved with a substitution.
Yeah.
The answer is never to cancel the game or call an immediate draw. I don't think that I have never been to a tournament in which that was the case. You can see why intuitively if you've gathered people and their physical presence is in one place and then you tell them that, you know, after two or three rounds of diplomacy, that game is over.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not going to fly.
Yeah, in a tournament environment, those other six people need results.
Yeah, they need results.
I've seen people like leave with instructions as if to say, like, no, all of my orders are hold for the rest of this game.
Oh yeah, but that's
a little different.
That's different.
It's up to the guy if he really wants to do that. Usually, this is the result of some kind of a tantrum.
Yeah.
There's a couple of reasons that this would happen. Either somebody gets really, really mad and just storms off.
Which I think is the rarer.
Which is the much rarer. Occasionally you have somebody who's like, seriously, I have to work.
I have a plane to catch.
Something like that. The latter, we're much likelier to substitute.
Mm-hmm. Almost always there's someone around who's not the TD that can step in and will play it out.
Usually sometimes, somebody who's boned in their existing game.
Right.
And the rule is, what do they usually do scoring-wise? Usually
the
player that leaves isn't eligible for any score, and the player who takes over can?
Yeah. It just depends on what that personal TD wants to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, that person, it's treated as if the person was playing two boards, so whatever rule you have for a person playing two boards, which is often your better score counts of the two.
Yeah.
So if you had a really crappy game someplace else and you subbed into this game and you did it better than you did in your crappy game, you would get that result.
There is one awkward thing with the substitution thing, and there is something that's sort of, I don't know if controversial is the right word, but it's something that people discuss and have different opinions about. When you come in as a sub, is it appropriate to just sort of start your diplomacy over with everyone, or is it appropriate to at least at the outset let the board tell you, like, okay, this guy has been, you know, like, okay, you're England now. You've kind of been France's ally for most of this game.
Yeah, and always in these cases, that the person leaving gives instructions or just kind of gives the lowdown.
You can try, but do you have to take them if you're the sub? This is something that people discuss, and it's more of a, you know, I've never seen a tournament have a rule about it, but it's sort of an ethics thing, and it's kind of a I can remember one time where my ally got subbed for and replaced by a guy who, Adam Silverman, if you're listening, who literally just stabbed me the next turn. I was like, oh, cool, my ally, it's going great. Yeah. And then that guy was like, dude, I got to go to work. And I was like, wait a minute, hang on, Adam Silverman, he stabbed me like that right away, sat down, wrote some Let's Ruin Eric Mead or it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a pretty good attitude about it. I was just like, man, why did that? Oh, man.
Come on.
But, yeah, exactly. But some people feel like, hey, I did all this work with this one guy. This isn't fair. You know?
And it's not fair.
But, you know, we live in the real world and sometimes.
Right. Is it more or less fair to just end the game? So
yeah,
I think on balance, people would agree that it's better to keep playing. And I also want to stress this. It's not something that happens very often.
No.
I would say
once every third tournament.
Yeah, maybe even if that.
Yeah.
I've only seen it a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I guess maybe that is a pretty liberal. In a house game, I guess we
totally
should mention,
different.
Totally different. In a house game, I think the rule book says if somebody wants to, they can just stop writing orders, in which case all their units hold.
Yeah, it goes into civil disorder.
In a house game, if somebody's got to go, then you can either just decide to end the game right there, like through unanimous consent, or if everybody else wants to keep playing, that guy's units can just start holding.
Yeah.
And that is actually the written rule. In a tournament, we try and do a little better by getting a sub.
Yeah. It's
so unfair when like all of a sudden your neighbor's units start holding and there's a guy all the way across the board who can't take advantage of it at all.
It's worse than having somebody come in and maybe undoing the entire At least you have the opportunity to influence that.
Or, for a house game situation, I do have one more suggestion. You could have, from that moment on in the game, this is the fun suggestion.
For the house chaotic? Game.
The chaotic, yeah.
Yeah.
From that moment on in the game, everybody gets to write one set of orders for the power that's abandoned, and then you draw out of a hat for yep. which ones actually get read. So in other words, every single turn for the rest of the game, you write your orders, and you write orders for the abandoned power, and then after all the other orders get read, somehow the order reader randomizes whose set of orders for the dead power
yeah.
happen that turn.
Well, the easiest way to do it is to write your orders, write the alternative orders underneath, and have somebody, and the order reader pulls out one, and that's going to be
Yeah, except these people write on different shapes of paper, so you might want to have like a die or something to
I
randomize
guess.
It. Yeah.
Whatever. This is so off topic. But if you've ever played Chaotic with a CD country, mm-hmm. Totally fun.
Super fun. Really, yeah.
It's really hilarious.
If you're just playing a house game and you're just playing for fun, try that sometime.
Yeah, it's nice.
And we've even had things where you're like, well, hang on. I know Nathan's ones were the ones that were written, but I want to know what Dave's were, because I want to know what he would have had Italy do.
Sorry.
Which is nice. Have a house rule about that, too.
Which is nice. That's the reason to put it on a separate piece of paper, so that
true.
You could probably tell by the handwriting. But you,
anyway.
You know, anyway.
Blah, 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 blah.
Okay. That's fine. See, that was a good one, because yeah. that was interesting.
He gives us good email, I'm telling you.
Dang.
All right. Awesome. It's just another one of these that I like to read every time. It's from, actually, he's written us two that I'm going to read. His name's James Ross Evans. He's recently found us. He lives in Australia.
Oh, good.
He understands that while we are familiar with America and Europe, he's been having trouble finding face-to-face games. What would be the easiest way? Didn't we cover this with...
Yes.
Melissa?
Yeah, with Melissa. What episode was that?
Yeah, going back a
three
couple
or four?
Episodes. No.
Five?
Not that long ago. I want to say 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there.
Too bad we don't have a way to figure this out.
Yeah, some kind of website that I
yeah.
can
look up. Mm, like search the website. Yeah. But, yeah, James, you can listen to Melissa.
Yeah, listen to Melissa, and then she has contact info right in the episode. We interviewed her, and she's going to point you in the right direction for Australia. And welcome to the show. And he writes another one. I'm going to kind of try and breeze through this because he actually has specific orders. But which we discourage when writing emails to us, because we don't actually like reading orders on the air, because they sound sort of boring when we do. But the gist of it actually is fairly funny. He's playing an online game and he wanted our advice on something. And I kind of like the situation. Let's see. He's England. He's about to put in sort of a generic Edinburgh to the Norwegian, London to North, and Liverpool to Yorkshire. He's just about to do this, and he gets an email from France saying, hey, why don't you go to North Sea English Channel in Wales? Not Germany here.
Yeah,
France.
France.
He gets an email from. Why don't you do that? And he says, at this point, I was dumbfounded. I immediately messaged Germany and basically said, hey, let's take down France. I then messaged France and said, boy, it's not every day the English player has the French player asking him to move to the channel in Wales. And he says, he was still online and I got the immediate message. It's a peace offering and I think it will be mutually beneficial. I will move to Burgundy and support you into Belgium.
Awesome.
Super awesome. he says, after seeing this, I thought, well, I'll go along with this, and then I can be in a position where I have a close, friendly ally with which to take Germany down, or I can get the German to help me take down France with my excellent position in two builds. I quickly nodded my virtual head to the French, saying, yeah, I'm up for it. So he moves to the English Channel in Wales. France moves to the Mid-Atlantic. He writes, Marseille holds instead of to Burgundy, which, okay, and goes Paris to Picardy. So he didn't actually even go to Burgundy, which is what he said he was going to do, but he goes to Picardy, so he's got the support to Belgium that way.
I haven't read this yet, but it's going to be super awesome when Germany goes to...
Yeah, and then Germany throws it all east, which was a total surprise.
That's awesome!
Kiel to Baltic, Berlin to Prussia, Munich to Kiel.
And wow! And then he basically, that's his 0-1 opening?
Yeah. Yeah. And
wow.
And then basically he says, so now what do I do? What would you do?
Solo?
Yeah, right.
That is epic!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He says, well, who do you attack first at this point? Do I ally with the trusting French against the Germans?
Yes.
Or do I ally with the ill-prepared German to take down the French?
No, you ally with the French.
Yeah. Okay.
Easy. Yeah, that's an easy one. You ally with the French. A guy that invites you into the channel in Wales, that guy's gonna do something terrible later. And, I mean, he just is. It's a peace offering. It's breast. I want you to have breasts in Iberia. It's a peace offering.
I wanted to be able to argue with you on this one, but
no,
I agree with that. There is no reason that the French guy is not your ally for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, Germany went berserk without telling anybody that he was going to go berserk.
And silly.
Just headed east, didn't cover anything. You're in the channel. France doesn't mind you in the channel. So if you ever get bored attacking Germany...
And I hope to God you're going to convoy that Army Wales to Belgium. I mean, I hope that is the plan.
Do exactly the plan, because it just so happens that you get to stay in the English Channel when you do that.
Build a fleet and an army and convoy your next one into the unguarded Netherlands, because, it's going to be great.
Why not? The broader point that we can take from this email, and this is why I thought it was interesting, is that... sometimes you'll be in a situation where an ally offers too much.
Yeah.
A potential ally offers too much. In that situation, you should almost always take it and be that guy's ally. Yeah. A, because of what Nathan said, if he's offering you too much once, he might do it again.
Yeah, definitely.
And B...
You want to encourage that behavior.
Yeah, you want to encourage that behavior. And if you're going to do something that might be interpreted as hostile to somebody, but that guy is interpreting it as friendly, that's always good.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like, I wish I could move to the English Channel right now, but I'm going to piss off France. And then France says, I want you to move to the English Channel. That's almost always a great thing for you.
That's high fives and applesauce right there. That's exciting.
Because every move has diplomatic consequences. And if there's a move that everyone's happy with, it's great that you wanted to make anyway.
Sure.
It's always great to make that move.
And obviously, we want to... the last asterisk on this.
Yeah.
I will say, if I was in this situation, I would... Since it's too much, I would be a little bit leery. I might question, okay, why is this person essentially offering me this great position? Where is sometimes people offer you something insane, and it's just because, in this case, I think France would, really screw himself by trying to just, make sure he could bounce the channel, but...
Right. Oh, I see. In case it's an elaborate setup.
Yeah, elaborate setup. Just a word of a little asterisk next to your advice.
That's true.
I just want to say, sometimes it's so good, it is too good to be true, sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. But if it's... Yeah. You should look for, what would this guy do if he was just trying to set me up here?
But I will say in 01, almost always.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, because why bother? Bounce you in the channel?
Yeah, it'd be terrible.
You'll sense those times when an ally is giving up too much.
Yeah.
Usually. Or a potential ally is giving up too much in order to... You can usually sense it. I mean, sometimes it feels like a trap. Most of the time...
It's a trap!
Yeah, exactly. Most of the time, it doesn't feel like a trap. And those times are the good times.
Yeah.
Those times you should expect to do well in that game. Or at least for a season or so.
Welcome to diplomacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I hope James writes us back, because I want to know how this game goes.
Yeah, you soloed yet?
This is awesome.
Yeah. There was one more. I don't know if I said that was the last one, but there was one more. Just a real quick one from our buddy Chris Babcock, who has started doing the Diplomatic Pouch. He's writing new episodes, or episodes. Everything's an episode. Issues. That's what they call it. What is it? Diplomatic Pouch.
It's the Diplomatic Pouch.
Yeah, just Google that. The Diplomatic Pouch. It's been around for a lot of years, and it's sort of napped for frequent years. Nathan and I both have old things that we've written on it going way back.
I think there's stuff in the, from the... No, it's early 2000s in there.
Yeah. But it's back up. He's planning an issue in December. He asked us to write a little something about our podcast for it in this email. But we just, I just wanted to include this to let y'all know that, hey, new stuff to read about diplomacy that's other than...
Definitely something to support. It's an institution. It's there. If you're... ever out there, you know, a lot of you are coming to look, you know, improve your game a little bit or just get some different perspectives. It is a wealth of resources.
Oh,
in
my
there.
God. So much stuff. Even if some of it's a little outdated, much
stuff. Such good stuff in
we're
there.
We're gonna be leaning on that a little bit ourselves over the next couple episodes if we're going to try and tackle stalemates and some of that kind of
stuff.
There's
a really great stalemate resources in there, which we're definitely going to mine for that episode.
Plus a gajillion variants and all that.
Good stuff. No, seriously, if you've never been to the Diplomatic Pouch, go
check it out. Sort of a, I don't really have any wrap up.
You don't have any wrap up?
That's all. We're out of emails that I wanted to read for this episode, and it's been going for a while. So coming up soon, guests, strategy, that sort of thing. We're keeping it under an hour if we just really hurry up and just say our last couple of things. Goodbye, Nathan. Thanks for being on the show. Okay.
And for Diplomacy Cast, this is Nathan.
I don't even know how to respond to that.